Well, let's meet our next guest on the Sunday Supplement. He is a local author, Dick Benson-Giles, and he's written an absolutely fascinating book about Lawrence of Arabia. It's called The Boy in the Mask, The Hidden World of Lawrence of Arabia. Dick, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Very nice to meet you. I have to say that I loved reading the book, and it told me so much that I didn't know. I mean, I think I probably knew most of what I knew about Lawrence of Arabia from the film, if I'm truthful with you. And that was how you came to him, wasn't it?
That's right. I mean, oddly enough, he would have survived anyway as a famous personality. There was wave after wave of interest, troughs and crests, yeah, you know. Yeah. And I think by about 1960, there was a bit of a trough. I think people, you know, Lawrence, the Second World War was over, and Lawrence was sort of part of the past, died in 1935. Then along came David Lean with this 4 hours of magnificent cinematography. And everyone thought, oh, my goodness, who is this bloke again? Let's have a look in. And it all started again, and it's never died since.
It's funny how we do rediscover people from time to time. I think Scott of the Antarctic, to some extent, that's happened as well. But you is it fair to say you became obsessed with Lawrence?
Yes, I think, you know, one likes to think one's professional, so one's rather scared by phrases, words like obsessed, because it obviously means you're slightly imbalanced if you're obsessed. But in a loose sense of the word, I was obsessed. I saw that. I mean, that's how I started, literally, as you've quite rightly put your finger on it. I went to see the film, and I came out of the place as if I'd been knocked out, knocked sideways. I just couldn't believe. Well, no, although subsequently with my researches, when I got really interested in him, I realised that the film had compressed a lot of characters, particularly British Army officers, into one person where there were six, you know, and some of the history was a bit skewed. But it did give you the feeling that Lawrence was a very complicated character, you know, who shouldn't perhaps be an officer. What was he doing there, you know? A man with a conscience, you know?
Yeah.
And But on the whole, it was... Anyway, the magnificent cinematography, the landscapes, the sweeping desert scenes, the fighting scenes, the colour, the script by Robert Bolt and so on, it was so good that I thought, well, if this man is anything like he's been presented in this film, he must be bloody amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, well, I better look into this. So my first book I stumbled upon was Richard Alderton's 1955 biography, which was the first knocking book. It really was a first-class masterpiece of denigration. So that by the time I'd finished it, I mean, he just was very selective and decided that, you know, anything anti-Lawrence he could find, he put in. So by the time I'd finished the book, I thought, oh, he's just like most heroes, feet of clay, nasty personal habits, not at all what he's meant to be. I thought, I'll just give it one more chance. And so I read another couple of books, and I thought, well, hold on a minute. And the more I read, the more I realised that Aldington had taken a party pre-position and was really totally anti-Lawrence even before he started researching. And ever since, I thought, this man is extraordinary. And I read more and more, you know, as you do, like a serious researcher. Let's see if we can use the falsifiability thesis, that if you can find something, look for something which proves that he wasn't great. The more I looked, the less I could find that it proved he was nothing. And I thought, this man is extraordinary. One man every 500 years appears
well,
like this.
Well, he was. I mean, from everything that I read when I read your book, I realised that there was nothing about Lawrence that I could say was normal. I mean, his whole life
is
completely different. And of course, there is a Plymouth connection. Let's talk about that.
Yes, yeah, so between about 1929, on and off, until 1934, just not long before he died, really, he was based here under Wing Commander Sidney Smith at Mountbatten. And he was very happy here. And of course, the Wing Commander's wife, Claire Sidney Smith, fell in love with him, which was kept secret for a long time. And in fact, Lawrence really saved their marriage because he kept her at a distance. I mean, they went on trips up the Tamar in this boat he called the Biscuit, which was a sort of speedboat.
Yeah, lovely picture of it.
Right. And there's some rare pictures of him with her. And she got really too keen on him, and he realised this. But he treated her with kid gloves, and it all was okay. But he was quite happy down here. But Sidney Smith were like a family to him, really. He used to go and he had the best of both worlds. People say, oh, well, he pretended to be an aircraft. But all the time he was hobnobbing with Churchill and sort of E.M. Forster and Henry Williamson and all this sort of thing. And Lady Astor, who was MP for Sutton, I think it was, Plymouth Sutton. She was mad keen on him as a person. And he took her around as a pillion on his motorbike all around the place. Now, I'm just reading the letters now. They haven't been published before about that period when she was here. And he had a great time. He used to go around with her on her visits, on her constituency visits, you know, seeing children's schools, and along would come Lawrence, and the kids would say, who's this? Is this Lawrence and T. Lawrence? Lawrence of Arabia! Oh, my goodness! So he could have stole the limelight from the MP half the time.
Yeah.
But he was quite happy down here, really, and he was helping to design and test speedboats, which in the Second World War were hugely important in saving the lives of airmen who'd crashed in the Channel, that sort of thing, because they went and saved them. So he contributed. I mean, even to this day, when the I don't know what they're called, some army group or RAF group, when they get together, a squadron, at the end of their annual dinner, they always raise a glass to shore, they say, which is, of course, what Lawrence called himself.
Didn't right.
It? Because yeah. of what he contributed to the design of these boats.
Yeah. Fascinating. I mean, we could talk all day, but what I must say is that the book is published by Lilliput Press, and
that's right.
there's a particular Irish... Well, many Irish connections with Lawrence, aren't there?
That's right. I mean, half the book is really taken. I mean, when I started wanting to write, I thought, heavens, there's so many books on Lawrence, and most of them are largely repetitive. Or if they're not, they're just very, very speculative. And you think, well, where does that come from? I don't see any backing for that in evidence. But I thought, well, the one area which hasn't been properly explored, there's never been more than two pages, or hadn't been, in any biography about Lawrence of Arabia's background. He was the illegitimate son of an Anglo-Irish gentleman.
Yeah.
It's this ridiculous story. If he wrote it in a book, people would say, no, that's too extreme, that wouldn't happen. In those days, in about 1870, you just did not run off with the nursemaid, you know.
Yeah.
And leave your wife and four daughters behind. You had an affair with the thing, and then you sacked her. If she got pregnant, she was sent away somewhere. But you didn't just leave your wife and children and all that wonderful lifestyle with all the money and big houses and that kind of thing and run off. But he had the guts, if you think, in one way of looking at it, he had the guts. His name was Thomas Chapman. He ran off with this governess, a Miss Lawrence, and never came back. And yeah. he went over to England and produced five sons, the second of whom turned out to be Lawrence of Arabia.
There's and another film in this, isn't there really?
A film, yeah. Yeah. Because his father died during the pneumonia pandemic in 1919, which actually killed more people in the First World War.
Yes, yeah.
And he overheard his father, before he died, obviously, overheard his father when he was age 10, when he, Lawrence, was age 10. He overheard his father talking to a solicitor about the estates and situation in Ireland, where he kept in sort of touch with it because of money matters and so on. And he was very bright, Lawrence, obviously, and he worked it all out, and it gave him a hell of a shock. Then he found out that not only was his father not Mr. Thomas Lawrence, but actually was Sir Thomas Chapman from Killua Castle in Westmeath. But not only that, but his mother was the illegitimate daughter of a Sunderland housemaid.
Good Lord.
So the shock was double.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made him, it really affected him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all of that is in the book in great detail, and it is absolutely fascinating. Now, if you're thinking, well, where do I get a copy of The Boy in the Mask, The Hidden World of Lawrence of Arabia, it will be available in Waterstones, and you'll be there too on Saturday the 7th of May.
Hopefully that is correct, yes, yeah. for a signing, yeah.
Well, that's I'm sure a lot of people want to get you to sign their copy, as I'm going to get you to do with my copy. Dick, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and I have to say I really, really enjoyed reading the book. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a great pleasure to talk about it, because I feel that this needs to be learned about Lawrence, really.
Indeed.
People say he was odd, but there were reasons why he was odd.
Yeah, but he was a genuinely great man, and I think you've done him proud in this book, and I'm sure that a lot of people are going to enjoy reading it. Dick Benson-Giles, lovely to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you too.